Okay, let's let Dick get wired up here. Everybody relax. Well, he was here, as I said, a few years ago, and I was a moderator on that program, and at that time, he gave me the honor of calling him Dick, so don't get mad at me, okay? I'm not being too familiar. Dick, welcome back to Oshkosh and to Warbirds in Review.
Dan, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Man, we're happy to have you. And, you know, you're about to reach a milestone, I hear. I was talking to John the other day, and John, he's about to reach a milestone, a mighty, it's an age with a nice lilt to it, I think.
Well, the next one is 99, is that right, Colonel Cole? The next birthday is 99?
I guess that's right.
Well, God bless you. I hope you're here to tell this story 1,000 more times for us. God bless you, Dick. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. I ask all people. You graduated from Steele High School in Dayton, Ohio, and enlisted in the Army Air Corps after 2 years of college at Ohio University, November the 22nd, 1940, before the war even started. Why did you decide to do that? Why did you want to enlist in the Army before the war started?
I had taken a civilian pilot training program to learn to fly, and I got a little impatient when about 40 days passed, and so I went down and enlisted, and fortunately, about a week or 2 weeks, I got orders to go to Parks Air College in St. Louis, and I was lucky enough to wiggle my wealth through that program, and I went from there to Randolph and Kelly.
Well, I would like to know, how did you get to be picked for the Tokyo raid, and how did you get to be Doolittle's co-pilot?
Well, I could tell you a lot of things about being the best co-pilot and so forth, but it wouldn't be true. I was screwed up with another older pilot from the 17th Bomb Group, and the group was getting transferred to Columbia, South Carolina. I had some training at Pendleton and at a place called Fell Field in Washington. And on the way to Columbia, he upgraded me to first pilot. And he was an instructor pilot. After we got to Columbia, and word was put out that they wanted to people to volunteer for a mission, he came around and wanted to know if we could go together. And I was particularly delighted because he was a nice fellow and a good pilot.
John, I'm going to let you take it from here. You know a lot more details than I do, and I'm going to sit back and enjoy, okay?
The only reason I know any details is because Scott and I were fortunate enough to get an assignment to do 4 hours on the Doolittle Raid. We did a little mini-series called Missions That Changed the War, which was on Military Channel. So I had to learn some things in a hurry. And again, there's things you hear about the Doolittle Raid all your life, you think you know, but then you find out what you don't know. And particularly now, you know, I used to think of Warbirds in Review as great educational enrichment experience. I think it's becoming primary education because they aren't teaching this in school anymore. And for those of you who don't know, our almost immediate response, and certainly coming from the White House after December 7th, 1941, and the attack on Pearl Harbor was, we want to bomb the home islands of Japan. The problem is we had no way to do that in terms of having the range to get there. Within 2 weeks of that attack, there was a meeting at the White House and Hap Arnold, the head of the Air Corps, and as well as Admiral King, head of the Navy, were there, and Roosevelt made it very clear, figure this out, we need to do this. And a guy that was on Admiral King's staff by the name of Lowe, he was a submariner, submariner, however that's said, not an aviator, was down at Norfolk, Virginia, and he noticed they had an aircraft carrier deck laid out on a runway for the fighter pilots to practice their passes, and he saw that guys were doing that with twin-engine bombers, and he said, well, we may not have the range, but what if we could give the bombers a ride to Japan or within enough distance to strike and go from there? Well, they figured out very quickly you were never going to land B-25s on a carrier, but they figured out with a lot of modification, hard work, and training, you could depart from there. And thus came the plan to get within range of Japan, take off from a carrier, do the job in Tokyo and four other cities, and then fly into eastern China, which is a whole nother set of circumstances. China had been under attack by the Japanese since 1937, and that attack interrupted a civil war between Mao Zedong and the communists and Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalists. So all of that had to be worked out as how to recover the raiders afterwards. These men were chosen because of their experience in the 17th bomb group with the B-25s. It's really been a pleasure. We've been able to meet all of the survivors, and since that great privilege, Tom Griffin has gone on. But Dick, I think these folks would like to know what caused you to be so enthusiastic about going when they told you it was dangerous. They told you you didn't have to go. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first off, I would like to say that that time I had not had a job up to after graduating from high school and going to a little bit of college. It was a step up for me. And on a maybe comical side, it was also doing the draft, and it was better than Leavenworth. But the 17th group was made up of about half old-timers and about the other half of new people like myself. And we had been training since July of 41 at Phelps Field Warning, Washington. We had got to know everybody. The camaraderie was first class. And on top of that, we had been 4 months in the southeastern part of the United States in a mock war with the Army. And that made our camaraderie a lot more better.
Okay, I think his right side is better, John. He asked about your enthusiasm for Doolittle.
Yeah.
And why you were so enthusiastic about launching off the carrier.
We had practiced at Eglin Field individually in a cruise with a young Navy lieutenant from Pensacola. He instructed us on how to make a carrier takeoff. The B-25 has a negative angle of attack, and he taught us to try and get the nose of the B-25 maybe 1 degree or so, or as close as we could get to it above the angle of
get
attack.
A positive angle of attack.
And by doing that, that gave us the maximum thrust that the two engines could put out.
Okay. Now, we're going to get into the mission now.
I know that I learned a couple of things about interviewing Doolittle Raiders. You better be very, very careful with the word hero. They don't like it. And you don't want to say suicide mission. They don't like that. And they have the enormous respect they have for Jimmy Doolittle. For me, trying to do a documentary was absolutely fascinating. And, you know, some of you know the history of Colonel Doolittle, some of you don't. At the time he came to lead this raid and was handpicked by Hap Arnold to do it, he had left the Army Air Corps. He fought in World War I, left, went to work for Shell Oil, saw some things overseas while traveling for Shell Oil, came back. He told Hap Arnold, who had been his boss in World War I, if you think we're going to stay out of this war, you're wrong. You better get ready. I think that was in May, and by the following July, he had gotten a letter from Hap Arnold's chief of staff saying, you need to come back into the Army Air Corps. So, you know, these guys were babies when they jumped out of an airplane in East China. Jimmy Doolittle was not. Nor was Jimmy Doolittle intended to go on that raid. He was hired by Hap Arnold to plan it, but Jimmy Doolittle said, I'm going to fly it, or that's just the way. And Dick can tell you some wonderful things about a man I know he most admires, and Jimmy Doolittle's determination to go on the raid and lead the raid.